County, Sound by Detroit.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome to the UAW Factory Whistle Show for October. What the hell's the date, Scott? 17th?
17th.
17th. Be snowing by next week. And
hey,
winter.
Don't you say that.
Next 7 months of winter will, you know, set in and we'll be shoveling snow. Anyway, we joined. You could hear it if I put everybody on in the green room. You could hear the show, the UAWD show. But it wasn't transmitting through our system. Let me get Jimmy on. It wasn't transmitting through our system. I don't know why it was cut off from it was cut off from Zoom. It wasn't Blog Talk. So something there. I don't understand it. Could get other Zoom shows in. Like I tried last night late. It was late, but I got it in. And I don't know why it didn't come in today. But let me get either this is Adrian or Kerry. It's one or the other.
It's Adrian. Hey.
Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Adrian.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I was listening.
Yeah, you were there. I seen you. Yeah, it was pretty good. What I'll do, if Scott gets it and posts the show on the website, I will play it during the week. Now, they're going to be mailing out, what, the 19th? Mailing out these ballots?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Ballots, 19th.
19th, okay. So I'll just hit the shows every other day or whatever and let it play on through.
Yeah, they have a
right.
reminder that if you don't get your ballot by the 29th, which would be 10 days later, October 29th, you should get in touch with the monitor.
Right.
Okay. Now, I wonder if you get in touch with a monitor and they send you another ballot, but then you have two ballots. How are they going to check and see if you voted twice?
You'll cancel one, I believe.
Well, how?
You'll call and tell them I've got two ballots, and they're probably numbered, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
I would think they are, too, but who's going to sift through that? I mean, are they going to put yes and no, or if you vote yes for direct? Are they going to write
as far as getting multiple ballots, they'll cancel that number ballot out.
Okay.
And they'll tell you the one you have. Keep that one and vote that one.
I got you. All right.
But as far as the vote tally, I believe they're hiring a third party to sort through those.
And I
and
hope
it's not Dominion. Hopefully it's not Dominion voting machines counting them.
No, I just wondered if it's going to work because I got three flipping postcards saying they had my address. Now, does that mean I get three ballots? Hell yeah, I'm ready. I'd love a Democrat.
You're damn right. Uh-oh.
Jim votes one number one vote. Adrian Ryan's one number one vote. Don votes.
Hell yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, you can make up some names.
Jimbo's direct voting system.
We got 49 people in the switchboard. If you'd like to join the conversation, push 1 on your keypad, please, and we'll get you right on. And if you're against direct voting, please let us know what your reasonings are. I would love to know.
Yeah,
we won't even yell at you.
You know, the one number one vote is definitely at the forefront, but right on his heels is John Deere strike and Kellogg strike.
Mm-hmm.
And John Deere, we're finding out more a little more bits and pieces and stuff, is that they wanted to go back in time. It wasn't far, but they wanted to go back and say from that point going forward, anybody who hired from that point going forward,
mm-hmm.
We're taking the pension back. And it's like, well, that's bullshit.
Take their pension back.
Yeah, they wanted to go back retroactive. There was a time space there, and they said if you were hired from this date moving forward, that they're going to move you to 401k.
Wow.
Well, that's bullshit. It's a violation of your old contract.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
I got pissed off at Channel 12 here locally because I heard them myself with my own ears on two different times saying John Deere turned down the contract, which gave them a 6% raise each year of the contract. I call horseshit because it was 3% every other year, if I remember correctly.
Right.
2%.
Right. We had to crack the language to look at.
Let me get Missy, I'm putting you on. You're on.
Hello.
Hello, dear.
Hey, Missy.
Hi, Miss.
Hey.
Missy, I got this to play real quick for Kellogg's. If you guys just kind of hang on, let me play it, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
It's a new show. It's Jimmy Dore Live. Hold on, let me.
Go to JimmyDoreComedy.com for a link for tickets. So there's a lot of worker unrest in the United States, but people said that they wouldn't go back to work because they're getting unemployment. Well, they're not getting unemployment anymore, and there's still a worker shortage. So there seems to be a window, a moment of opportunity here for workers to rise up. And a lot of their unions are corrupt, like the ones, the auto workers, which they're now under a decree. What's happening here? Kellogg. So we're reporting on strikes all the time now. So they're successful. Kellogg's 1,400 cereal factory workers hit the picket lines. Workers at all the Kellogg cereal factories in the United States went on strike after negotiations unraveled over benefits and vacation time. It's at Kellogg's. And you know what I think about a strike at Kellogg's? They're great. So, okay. Workers at all Kellogg cereal factories in the United States went on strike after negotiations unraveled over benefits and vacation time. The work stoppage covers over 1,400 workers at factories in Michigan, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. These factories produce such covered staples as Rice Krispies, Raisin Bran, and Frosted Flakes. The workers are represented by the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco, and Grain Millers International Union, the same group that organized strikes at Nabisco and Frito-Lay plants during the summer, which we covered. Kellogg's workers have been working long. By the way, they make some great stuff. So no cereal, no snacks, no entertainment. Life's about to get rough for stoners. That's all I'm saying. Here we go. Kellogg's workers have been working long, hard hours, day in and day out, to produce cereal for American families. But the company has responded by cutting benefits and threatening to send jobs to Mexico. Kellogg is making these demands as they rake in record profits without regard for the well-being of the hardworking men and women who make those products, that they have created the company's massive profits, the union president said. Kellogg is trying to institute a two-tier employment system in which new hires will make less money, have higher health insurance payments, and will not earn a pension, which characterized the company's proposal as a divide-and-conquer strategy that asks the current workforce to sell out the next generation of Kellogg workers. This is exactly what's happening at John Deere. So there's a John Deere. They just voted, 90% of them voted to strike on a contract that their union leader said was good. You should take it. And they said, no effing way. And part of it is they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to make this generation of workers sell out the next generation of workers by saying the new hires get effed. What a insidious, cynical, unbelievable ploy to divide workers. And they're not falling for it. Look, they're not falling for it. The industry is up against labor shortage. Kellogg's chief financial officer, Amit Banati, said during a recent call with investors. But only is it not only is it having a tough time filling factory jobs, there are not enough drivers to meet the company's national and international freight needs. It's impacting the entire supply chain. Strikes in other industries are potentially looming. Tens of thousands of workers around the U.S. could go on strike in the coming weeks in what would be the largest wave of labor unrest since the teacher strikes in 2018 and 2019, which won major victories and gave the American labor movement a significant boost. Hey, let's join a picket line. There it is. Kellogg's on strike. Lancaster, Memphis, Battle Creek, Omaha, Nebraska. Kellogg's on strike. And here's all the stuff. There it is. Frosted Flakes, Fruit Loops, Mini Wheats, Cashew, Rice Krispies, Smart Starts, Kellogg's Sugar Pops, Corn Pops, Crave, Apple Jacks, Mueslix, Raisin Bran, All Bran Honey Snacks, Honey Smacks, Corn Flakes, Crispix, Bear Naked, and Cracklin' Oat Bran.
I stopped eating cereal when I started getting pubic hair.
So that would be it. Let me bring in Nick. Now, they're talking about a big labor uprising. Do you see that happening?
Yes, and this is what the corporate media has been desperate to avoid covering, right? They are covering everything except the massive strikes are going on nationwide. I think, and that's on purpose. And I did last time I was on here. I do it on Friends and Leftists all the time. I actively rally against the culture war. I think it's a massive waste of fucking time, especially considering what we're in right now. And that's what they want you to focus on, so they don't talk about how corporate power has crushed workers in my lifetime. So we see all these people going on strike, but do not fall for the trap that the shiplibs want you to fall for and claim that it's just one bad company. And that's something that they will admit. They'll be like, oh, Kellogg, so-and-so, this coal mine, so-and-so, whatever. They would say, oh, this company is bad. These managers are bad. And as a leftist, always, it's a systematic problem. This is the result of laissez-faire capitalism. Look at Amazon's conditions. You think it's just these individual companies? Amazon is the biggest employer in the United States. And they are historically known for having horrific conditions at their job. The largest employer. So this is a systematic thing. I'm glad each one of these strikers are the people are striking, but don't fall for that trap and think like, oh, I got to just this company, make sure this company get boycotted. Oh, this is going to be the answer. No, it's the system. So we got to stand in solidarity with the workers. Don't get me wrong. Stand in solidarity. Don't cross the picket line. Do not do that. But it's going to be a systematic approach that we need in order to stop this from happening.
I hope the workers rise up. I've had quote unquote labor leaders on this show, and none of them seem to have, except for Christian Smalls. I had a guy on from the AFL-CIO, completely worthless. Completely worthless.
On purpose.
On purpose. We brought in a woman who wrote books about organizing. And she only really seemed to care about she didn't seem to have anything helpful for us. It was really depressing. She just seemed to be anti-Trump, and it's really depressing.
And our problems didn't start with Trump.
And our problems did not start with Trump, ladies and gentlemen. Trump is gone. Joe Biden's in office.
Not at all. Can I add this, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Because I always want to cover everything in the guise of the class war, and I'm going to add a lot of anecdotal experience and people I talked to as a citizen journalist. I had a lot of great conversations with people, and I'm gonna be 100% honest with you guys. I think this worker shortage is a myth, because I know people that are looking for jobs all the time. They're having a hard time finding them, and I think this is a capital strike that's going on, because you have a lot of people who shifted to the left who are no longer demanding to work for starvation wages. And we see the media coordinating with the Biden administration. You see this giant messaging campaign to try and get people to convince other people that the workers, oh, Americans are just lazy. The Americans don't want to work. No, this is a soft strike to demand for higher wages. That's why people are not taking these low-paying customer service jobs. So when I say this worker shortage is a myth, what I mean by that, there have been plenty of evidence of businesses sharply increasing their wages and giving better benefits, and they immediately fill their positions. So what is that? There are people that are applying for jobs that they are 100% qualified for, but they are not getting because they were trying to – this is a complete myth, and you can see with the Biden administration, they're cutting the unemployment benefits, and that is designed to cut the negotiation power of the workers. And because if you have people on unemployment benefits, they're able to negotiate with their ruling class, okay, I'll go back to work if you pay me more. But the Biden administration is teaming with the corporation, all right, I'm going to cut the benefits, I'm going to blame the unvaccinated for everything that's going on, and then you can continue to pay them starvation wages. And this is what they do in their politics. So I just want to add that because everything that we see with these strikes, everything we see with the messaging of the media smearing these workers, that's part of this class war. And that's part of this capital strike that I am seeing. Once again, this is me more reporting as a citizen journalist, but I know people are looking for jobs. I know people who qualify who cannot get these high-paying jobs. Because, once again, I think this is nonsense. This is nonsense. So anyway, that's all I want to add, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Well, I know that Southwest Airlines had to cancel 1,800 flights. And they said it was over weather, and then other reports that it's over work. There was no other airline had to cancel any flights over weather, so everything's very suspicious. So yeah, it's your suspicions are founded. I don't really know what the hell the worker shortage is about. Everybody said that when the unemployment ended, everybody would go back to work.
Yep.
But now they keep saying there's a worker shortage. Well, maybe there's just a lack of people's willingness to go work for starvation wages. I don't know how they're paying their bills, but you're saying that this isn't really happening. You're saying that.
And that's, once again, this is me being a citizen journalist, the member of the proletariat. You can ask anyone you know. Like, we want higher wages. And I've seen people that apply for these jobs, they are not getting it. And there was a viral tweet that was on Twitter where people were sharing the same experience. We were looking for good jobs. I'm not talking about the trash jobs. The trash wages, the wages that pay starvation wages. I mean jobs that they are qualified, they are not finding. And once again, now, that's not the same thing with the service work, because they want people to believe that people don't want to do service work because they're lazy. And this is the coordinated psyops by the media and the liberal class to go along with it. But no, we don't want to work these jobs because they are underfunded, and you cover how they treat us. And this is coming out of personal experience, because I've been at work for 15 years. I haven't had a job for more than 2 years because I'm like, you guys are ripping me off. You got to treat me like trash. And you got a whole generation that are anti-capitalist because we live the hellhole of this late-stage capitalist system. Once again, so this is me speaking out of experience. You guys can ask around. And this is me as an independent citizen journalist debunking and pushing back against their talking point that there's a worker shortage, because there is not. And I promise you guys that. And we cover this all the time, friend. And I can get into great detail on that. So
you're saying that if the establishment capitalists decided to pay living wages, that there wouldn't be a worker shortage.
Oh, Jim, yeah, because also what they are doing, they are covering for the companies that don't pay a living wage. So instead of saying, oh, the workers are lazy, they can say the workers are not doing the job because they're not paying high enough. Do you see how everything is connected? And that's what I always want to preach. Connect all the issues. You have the corporate media that's pushing this. You had the Biden administration that's cutting unemployment benefits from workers so they had no negotiation power against the corporations instead of taking the back of the workers. Now, this kind of stuff is unthinkable to us because we live in the capitalist hellhole of neoliberalism. But now I want you guys to use your imagination on this. Imagine if we had a pro-worker president and a pro-worker government.
Wow.
Now, in this situation where you have the corporations and the ruling class who refuse to pay us a living wage, the pro-worker government can say, hey, we're going to keep the unemployment benefits and we're going to keep them high to the standard in which we think the workers should be paid. Now, if you want the workers to work with you, you got to pay them more. These are the politics that you can do to put pressure on corporations to increase wages for the workers. Now ask yourself why the Democrats and Joe Biden is doing the exact opposite.
That's right.
Class analysis that people forget. This is basic class analysis that so many people that claim they read theory can't even operate on. Very basic.
Well said, well said. Thanks for coming on and saying that.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy.
Everybody check out Nick on Fred Hampton Lestis. You're doing great work. Thank you very much. Nick Cruz, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Thank you, Jimmy.
All right. There you go. Thank you. Who sent me this? I don't know. Local 602, I know that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Local.
You need to share that with me so I can post that up. That's pretty good. And it's not just the Biden administration. Okay? It's not
He hates, believe me, these guys hate. This is Jimmy Dore. He's definitely not a Trump supporter whatsoever. But he's also even, you know, he says it like it is in his mind, and he's got a great show.
It's people who control the system, you know, has lots of your legislators and the banks and the World Banks, and I mean, it gets deeper than that. It's not, you know, yeah, I can put a face on it. Okay, we'll blame, you know, Joe Biden. Okay, well, it's not just Joe Biden. It's not just his. It's not him. It's just part of his people that are on his cabinet, the people who influence the votes through campaign contributions, big businesses. You know, there's a lot that goes into that whole thing, you know.
Right.
But I agree with what was being said, and it is. It's appalling that Kellogg wants to go to a two-tier system. And I think I talked to you just a little bit earlier, and my son told me that some of these people will be forced to work 80 hours a week in Kellogg.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, 80 hours a week.
Now, I did talk to somebody else who went to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and, you know, they said the unemployment rate's at 4.8. That's awful funny, unemployment to 4.8, because everybody, look, everybody's got a wanted help sign on.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we have to understand, because the length of this situation that we're going to put around the coronavirus, uh-huh, a lot of places closed up, and they're not coming back. They're gone.
No, they're gone.
There'll be factories, mom-pop places, restaurants, you know, bait shops, all sorts of things closed. They're gone. They'll be back again.
Yeah. I've been saying this for the last 2 months on my other show. I believe the government and the mainstream media is pushing this. There's jobs. There's not enough workers, and that gives them an excuse to leave the southern border wide open, because they are claiming they need workers, and which they don't. I don't believe they do at all. They just want cheap wages.
Well, I agree with what that last guy that was speaking, what he said when he called on that fellow's show. I agree with 100%. You know, if you pay people a living wage that they can afford to live on, they'd probably go back to work. But you go in there and fill out an application and you say, starting wage for a full-time job at this level is $15 and some change. And you go, what's top pay? $28. But it'll take you 8 years to get there. My bills can't handle $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or like John Deere, we're going to take the pension backwards and cut it off and put you into a 401k. And what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people have been misleading, like Jimmy said, about the increase. I mean, my word, I read it right off the contract last week. If you're the lowest tier on there, you get 97 cents stretched out over 6 years. That's not 6%.
May I comment on something?
John, go right ahead.
As far as you talk about the unemployment numbers, the numbers are never right. And the reason the numbers aren't right is because they cannot calculate the amount of people that are not working.
Correct.
Because they're not on the unemployment rolls.
Correct.
That's right.
So, and that system has been in place forever that way.
Yep.
Right. And if, let's say I work for you, and because of what happened, the situation in the last 2 years,
you hadn't laid me off. And I was out, and I said I've been out out of the new constraints. I said I've been out 18 months, and I'm on a, I'm out of unemployment. There's no more trade relocation allowance or nothing like that, and I'm out. Okay, well, according to the government information, I don't get counted because I'm no longer on that roll. And like you said, there are millions of people who have fallen off those rolls. They're not being counted. And somebody talked about that this last week. And I can't remember what talk show it was that I was listening to on radio and way it works. And they said that they're saying the number is 4.8%. And the guy said on the radio, it's XM radio. He said, bullshit. He said, if you want a true number for unemployment, he says it's probably closer to 40%. Wow, 40%. I think that's a high number, but I can go with 20. You know, and then we look at certain parts of like Detroit, Grand Rapids, a lot of the big cities. Those numbers, like in Flint, I'm sure it's probably still at like 18-19% unemployment rate. Some of these big cities, they're high.
Yeah, they're high.
I agree with you, Adrian.
They're even higher now because of, we had to shut all these little businesses down, and a lot of them went out of business. And that's who hires the most people, these small businesses.
Yep. I cannot think of the name of the pizzeria. I'm on Saginaw and Atherton. Cecilia's, or Cecilia, remember they used to bring the pizza on the paper bag?
Yes, sir.
Okay, they're gone. They're out of business right now.
Really?
The old man, Lou, the guy that used to own it, I guess he passed away this last year. And his nephew's overtaken it. And I saw somebody said they're still not open yet that he thinks he knows of.
I got a question for all you people. I tried to ask the UAW monitor a question through email why he is allowing the UAW to change the process on the way John Deere's voted. Now they're even dividing the membership by now they're changing the voting locations. Remember how they voted, people? Now they got to vote at each one of their divisions. They're dividing them up again. Just like tears in the plant, management learned, divide them. The unions learned, divide us, and they beat us. Think about this, people. We should be raising hell. It started out that way. It should stay that way.
Yeah. Divide and conquer, I think that's true. Because then I can deal with smaller factions of people. I mean, you have more influence on a smaller group of people than I do a large bunch of people with just a few people who are informed to ask the right questions so everybody else can hear that. You're right.
Exactly that. And just like the UAW's learned by throwing a bunch of locals together and amalgamate them, now you create a political machine and you make it real hard for another party that's not in power to get elected. And then you take out the bullshit that they can't campaign. And I mean, my God, you got a dictatorship, don't you?
Yep.
That's what we're looking at, people. That's exactly where we're at today. So we need direct voting.
Oh, absolutely. We won't get another opportunity like this, I'll tell you that.
Not in my lifetime, Don. You're right. You're right. Not in our lifetime.
And if these cheer workers ever want to get rid of those cheers, this is the way to do it. The only way to do it, actually.
Yep.
Actually, we need a national labor strike.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's that?
And get rid of these get rid of these damn joint programs.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of them. I think that was the start of the whole mess in the first place, is joint. Everybody gets paid off.
Down it was. That was Pandora's box to get their kids and their buddies and all their gophers in there.
in their foot in Solidarity House. That was how they got in. Remember that? Curry came from a training center. I can't find where he really worked in a plant. Maybe Adrian can find that, but I haven't been able to. I think I touched on a sore toe there, people.
Yeah, no, I don't know nothing about this man, where he come from.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All I can do
is research that he came from the training center where, you know, the general came from, Hollyfield. He come from that training center, from what I understand, but I can't find anything past that where he actually was in a plant. Now I look at it, okay, he came from a training center. Now he's appointed president. That's all this son of a bitch is known as, the appointed system.
Paul, you
and
are on with
that. Oh.
Greetings, you rabble rousers.
Greetings,
Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, I think this is a good time to remind everybody out there who's retired that, you know, I spent the last 15 years working at the plant, having all your rights bargained away, the jobs outsourced, you look forward to having a union that backed management rather than your concerns, not to mention the fact you've been retired for 12 years, have had no increase on your pension. They bargained all these bonuses for workers, wouldn't even throw us a bone. Get off your rear end and take some revenge on this union. Tell all your friends to make the effort to vote, because this is your one chance to get back at the union that bargained away everything our union forefathers fought for. And I'd like to say we do have a sterling example there of a union in the Kellogg's union. They haven't bought into jointness. They haven't bought into screwing their kids and grandkids. They've shown more principles than the UAW has shown. So we need to give them a big hand support.
Yep, absolutely.
It's encouraging to know there's still a union out there that functions like a union.
Yeah, it is refreshing. Yeah.
And this is our one and only chance to get control over who gets appointed. Because if these international people find out it might cost them their job because they put a bunch of their incompetent friends and relatives in bargaining positions that don't know how to bargain, this is your chance to put a stop to that. It is a chance to get rid of the tears. It's a chance to get a union that's responsive to the membership rather than management.
Yep. Sure is. You know, and my concern with the Kellogg strikers, they're going to be okay, I think, out of this whole thing. It's going to take a minute. But my concern with John Deere is that they don't get Mulholland.
Yeah.
Because listening on that part of that call, and I think Don was on there on that meeting, and that John Deere guy said that, and I'll quote you, he looked up at the table. Some of those guys were sweating bullets and walking the building because they knew they didn't know what to do. Other guys back there were only answering questions with one word answers only. Nobody at that table, when they faced those striking workers, had an action plan and a call of duty, what they were going to do and how they were going to take care of this. That's sad.
Scott,
it was a lot. Yeah.
Did you ever take any of the Dale Carnegie classes? Because that's what I heard in listening. You keyed on it. Dale Carnegie taught you answer your questions with one word or less. And that's what they said. One word or nothing.
Yeah.
And doing so, they can't say they lied to them. And like you said, I think they're trying to play them people for being arrogant and, you know, a little bit slow. But I actually think the John Deere worker is going to surprise a lot of people. And if we keep backing them, I think right things and good things will happen. A lot of people would be smart to buy that book Joe Burns wrote and understand that he was on management side of the house and read the book. What was it called? The Power of the Strike?
I think it was.
Yeah, that's the only tool we have, people, against these greedy corporations is the strike. So we don't need to extend no contracts because we now know when we extend them, instead of letting them expire, all the gravy, all the bullshit's in the trough gets continued when they re-up the new contract because it never expired. Got to let that shit go. We don't need all that crap no more.
Well, we definitely don't need, what is it, paragraph 8 regarding management's rights? We're supposed to work like dogs, find every way we possibly can to save them money while they scheme to outsource their jobs and close their plants and get out of market segments. So the thing is, that's one thing that needs to go. If we're going to be involved in jointness, then management needs to be pledging to increase jobs, not get rid of jobs.
We all talk about
wrong with true jointness. We don't have real jointness.
Paul, we all talk how great the 79 agreement was. We didn't have jointness in 79. Jointness came when we opened up the 79 agreement and gave away concessions for this jointness. Wake up, people. That's where the shit got in our contract. You don't need joint shit. I want my own bathroom. Thank you very much.
Adrian, you gonna say something?
No, I'm listening.
Okay.
Because I listened to some things. I heard someone said, "This is your time to take revenge." This is not about revenge.
No.
We don't want revenge. We want us as members, because we are the union, to be strong and to stand up for our rights.
Right.
Our right is that if we have a job, we just do that job. As I spoke last week, the company is responsible for marketing. I have no problems with that little statement that the company has the right about its business. I have no problem with that. That's their business.
That's right.
But when you have job skills, qualifications, and you have sheets that tell you how to run a job, that's it. That's our function. We don't have to try to raise production. None of that. That's not your job.
Right.
And that's what we need to get into our heads. We're hired to do this job. This job says do this. That's it.
For being a retiree, I still want revenge. Thank you.
I'm referring to revenge against union leaders who haven't done their jobs. An opportunity to start holding them accountable, you know, because...
Oh, they need to be held accountable, yes, I agree with that.
Because under this system, they feel free to essentially collude with management on certain things that they know their membership doesn't want. And my problem with paragraph 8 is the way they're doing it now. They're just saying, we want to move all our jobs out of here. We're going to do it. And the Kellogg's workers said, no, we're not going to go for that. You know, what's the sense of working with a company whose real goal is to eliminate every American job? I mean, that's a suicide pact when you go along with management saying they have that kind of power.
What I thought was great about that, Paul, is the way the Kellogg's workers stood up and said, no, no more.
We've seen what you did to the Nabisco Oreo worker in Chicago. They worked their ass off 7 days a week for a year, and then behind your back, you ship the whole shit to Mexico.
Right.
People, all Oreos are made in Mexico now. Understand that the good people of Chicago caught another short oven. You know, they only got half baked. That's bad. Even to a stoner, don't get half baked.
But then what's wrong with us? I haven't eaten an Oreo since they moved to Mexico.
Me neither.
I tried to stay away from Nabisco products. I had graham crackers here. I can't even eat them. They don't even taste right. So that's something that's just going in the garbage. It's, you know, sometimes in order to really prove your point, and this is what I'm talking about, the company has the right. They do have the right to run their business. I had a right not to buy your damn product. And so if you think that I'm cutting off my nose to spite my face, sometimes I need to do that.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I think Jim said something about the strike as our only weapon. No, it isn't. We have, we used to use work to rule. There was threats of boycotts. That's how, for, what was it, for 5 or 6 years, they kept that van plant running in California. When General Motors wanted to close that plant, the local organized boycott threat on the West Coast and organized in the minority communities in Los Angeles. And that threat of a boycott kept that plant operating until the International Union undercut them. You know, we have a lot of tools. You know, under work for rule, you keep getting your paycheck, but management gets hurt, not you. Because they rely on people doing extra.
That's right.
And people do.
Yeah. Well, these people have a mistaken idea that that the company will be fair to them if they're fair to the company. But another interesting point was you talked about these workers being forced to work 80 hours a week. I knew a lot of General Motors workers who were whining if they couldn't work 80 hours a week, if they couldn't work 12 hours, couldn't work Saturday and Sunday. Apparently, they have a little different ethic there at the cereal plants.
Yeah, Scott and I were talking about that today, 80-hour workers.
Yeah, they loved it. Of course, a lot of them were on their third wife. Because they
I was
were never
getting ready
home.
To say that.
What's that?
Right. I was getting ready to say that. That's why a lot of them had so many divorces.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't have sense enough to take a day off.
And they lose half of what they worked their butt off for.
Yeah.
And lost
That's
their
right.
wife.
I mean, I actually had a skilled tradesman tell me he worked, you know, 3 p.m. to 3 a.m., 7 days a week, and he said he spent quality time with his kids. I'm thinking, when do you see them?
Jeez, yeah.
And when do you sleep? Oh,
yeah.
He must have slept on the job.
Yeah, maybe.
That's the only way I can see it.
Yeah. That's it.
You know,
Paul,
I mean,
that's years back when they pulled the, they took the coffee pots out of the plant. Well, third shift they saw 30% reduction in production. Then they goes, we'll let third shift have their coffee. That lasted 2 days, and then everybody got their coffee pots back. I think they learned if we were willing to drug ourselves to let us do it.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't think a modern auto plant could operate without caffeine.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They've cranked the work pace up to the point where people wouldn't be able to keep up unless they had, you know, 4 or 5 cups of coffee or 30 ounces of Mountain Dew.
Right.
Right. And all these people come in and these younger generations now with all these energy drinks and Red Bull and Mountain Dew and, you know.
Yeah.
That's for sure, Scott. I didn't realize they got energy drinks now. They got alcohol. I didn't notice that in the plant for about 2 years, but there was this one hot chick on third shift. She was sitting there getting drunk all night. I mean, she used to bring a six-pack of that in. I said, isn't that a lot of energy drinks? She goes, dude, that's got booze in it, too. And I started looking, and it had like 16-18% alcohol. I'm like,
wow.
Of course, a lot of those people won't have any teeth by the time they're 40. Assuming all the sugar and, you know, that high fructose corn syrup they put in pop and energy drinks is awful, and it sticks to your teeth more than sugar.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting time we're at right now. You know, we've had a lot of strikes in the last year.
Yeah.
There's,
now, deer did go
unless,
out and they're picketing, right, Scott?
What's that?
Did they let the deer contract buyer, and they're out picketing, or are they just out picketing? I can't see where they let it expire. The reason why I'm asking that is, like me and Adrian, I keep pointing out, is if they let the damn thing expire, all the extensions, the memorandums, all the side agreements are null and void.
Right.
But if they come back with the new agreement and then backdate that bitch, that's when
mm-hmm.
you get in trouble, is when they backdate it.
Good point. I don't know.
Well, this strike is a reason for every worker at John Deere to vote for direct election of officers. That, you know, 30 years ago, they wouldn't have had the gall to bring that kind of a contract to the membership.
I think you want a no vote from them. Just remind them about, what was his name, Dennis Williams?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Dennis Williams. It was the other guy, wasn't it?
Gary
Jones?
No, it was
Dennis.
Now, which one took him out on strike and lost their ass? That might have been King.
Well, wasn't Williams the architect of the multi-tier?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He started with the agriculture division with that.
Who was the one that took him out last time and they've come back with the last and final offer? That was about 10 years ago. I can't remember. Was that Dennis Williams or was that King?
I think it was Gettlefinger.
Really?
Gettlefinger was before King.
Okay. Well, I'm bad. I'm bad.
Yeah, it was.
But, you know, you got to remember, John Deere's taken it up the tailpipe a couple times now.
Yeah. Who was it that went to the VEBA? That was Caterpillar, right?
The first one that went bankrupt?
Yep.
Yeah, I believe that was Caterpillar.
Yeah.
Yeah, Caterpillar was on strike for many, many a year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and the sad thing about that was Caterpillar was so profitable at the time that Don Feitz, their CEO, testified in Congress that their plants were so productive and profitable that it wasn't even worth moving production to Mexico.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. There's always money in the... there always will be money in the agricultural department, always.
Yeah.
Granted, all the stuff lasts a long time, but as we get more farmers and more equipment, older stuff, the parts aren't available there no more.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out. All right.
I was going to say, I did call my 90-plus-year-old uncle and talk to him about the one member, one vote. And he listened, and I told him about the ballot coming. He said, yes, he knew. But I reiterated with his wife.
Okay.
He said, please. please make sure he votes. Well, remember one vote. And then I went into talking about, you know, you haven't had an increase on your pension. They took away your Christmas bonus. And she was like, oh, yes, oh, yes. So.
Yeah. Talk some money.
A lot of these medical co-pays have really hurt retirees retired several years ago. They were supposed to be taken care of.
Yeah, they're taken care of, all right.
Yeah. I'm fortunate that I took care of myself and got out in 30 years before they put the hurt to me, and I had all kinds of medical issues. But a lot of these older people put in 40 years or so, and they're in sad shape.
Yeah. They sure are. A lot of them don't get a big pension.
No.
No, that's a fact. That one guy, he retired.
Well, that
what
was
he tell
me? One of the reasons why I called my uncle, because he retired in the 80s, late 80s. I know he had 48 years when he retired.
Right.
And, you know, I think back when the pension may have been 30 years at $2,200 a month.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know he got extra monies because of his years of service, but there was a time that they only would pay you $50 a year extra up to 40 years.
Right.
And so he fell in that.
Wow.
Well, our union wouldn't fight for COLA. They fought for COLA for themselves, but
right.
They wouldn't fight for us.
You still get COLA. Don't forget that. We all still get COLA. You just don't get to bring it home, son. Somebody
right.
else gets the bacon. That nickel now... Handline right, he's figuring that's right around $4.50 an hour now, Scott.
I'm talking about COLA on pensions, Jim.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just think, we're what is it, getting a 5.9% increase in our Social Security? Our pensions should have been indexed to inflation, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, that's why I got so mad about that media saying that shit about the Deere contract and how these workers turned down that thing. I'm like, Jesus Christ, the PDF file, if you look, it's in red, but you got to hold your head upside down to read the damn shit. But the bottom tier, only after, 5 years of that contract, they walk away with a 97% increase in their hourly wage.
And they were saying
it was a good thing on ABC, and I'm like, how the hell can you people do that? This media is so painted against the damn worker, and you wonder why we're rebelling? Shit.
I'm to the point now that when I watch news media, I don't even look at them to hear what they're saying, because you're listening to a bunch of lies, and I don't know if that's just the network that's telling them this is what they have to say to us. So I look at the way they're dressed and all the cackling that goes on, because we're not really getting information that is really viable.
No, you're right.
And you're getting a lot of untruths. I'm not going to say that they're totally lies, but they it's not enough information.
Yeah. They omit pertinent information.
Yes, they do.
No, like on the West Coast, if riders try to burn down a police station, they call them, you know, mostly peaceful demonstrations. When hundreds of cops are injured by rioters, they don't mention that. And I used to just gall me when they would say in the news media that when we laid off, we made up to 95% of our pay, when really, in actuality, it was more like 70% by the time they taxed it. And the union would never speak up and correct that.
Right.
Hell, the union called the newspaper and told them when you got a raise. That used to piss me off.
Oh, property
yep.
coming out. Yeah, they broadcast all of that. Make the public mad at you.
Yep.
I don't know how many the groups that, you know, that's on Facebook, and if you read through comments, I see the lackeys were out, like Ralph, what's his name, Ralph Light. I can't think of this other guy's name. I know his name, his first name was Michael something, and he was saying that, oh, the delegate system works, and I was so glad that man wasn't near me.
It's worked pretty well for the in crowd.
Right, and it's like, why is it that they are so strong on not wanting one member, one vote? I mean, I can tell you why. I mean, if you're in power, you want to stay in power. But what are you afraid of? If you are doing what you're supposed to do, you shouldn't be afraid of one member, one vote. Because you have the opportunity to be voted back in.
If you do your job well, that's the best way to keep your job.
Exactly. And so, you know, and like I say, if when we read our Constitution, and it says to us that the members are the highest authority, how do you overrule us if we're the highest authority? System of double talk, huh? Just like
no,
yeah.
They're doing that, Adrian, by dividing us with these tears, and they got us fighting amongst ourselves and fighting the two animals we need to fight. I'm sorry. We need to fight our union and management collectively, because they're the ones that are sticking the knife in the workers, wherever you want to call it. I'm being polite, folks. Take it away. Medication's working.
Oh, boy, I tell you.
God, somebody's talking to you in the chat room.
Yeah, thank you. Is somebody else to get in on?
What's that?
Is somebody trying to get on?
No.
Press 1. Okay. All right.
Just press 1 if you want to get on, folks. There's a lot of people in the switchboard. 40.
Yeah, we only got a couple minutes left.
Now we got 30 minutes. I added some time. I don't know if they're going to give it to us since I was trying to. I ran the other show for a while.
I understand.
I don't know. They might cut us off at any time, so we'll try for 30 more minutes.
Well, one point we should make here to people who are listening, we're not anti-union. We just want reform in our union. I would suppose, since I went through a union drive that failed one time. And one of the first things they do is they, you know, management hires a union busting law firm. And I wouldn't put it past some of these people to be listening to our show and taping it. So I want people out there that are listening understand we are very much pro-union. And this is my opinion. I don't know if others would agree with it, but you're better off with a corrupt union than no union at all, because the boss can't just fire you because he doesn't like your looks. They have to go through a grievance procedure, and that's one of the best things you get from a union is that type of job security. You're not an at-will employee.
Well said, Paul, because we're all pro-union. I want to make that clear to you.
Yeah, definitely.
We just want to throw out the bums.
Yeah, throw out the bums, and the bums that ripped us off, I want to take their pension away from them. They don't deserve a pension from the UAW.
No.
We're the guys that say we all want to make the same cake. We don't want 8 different levels of pay, so you don't like me because I make a nickel more. Yes, we want equality. These are the things we want.
There are people working in a plant that are making about half the money I made 12 years ago, and they're being told to save their money for retirement and to save money to pay for their health care after they get out of there. Insane.
Yeah. Brian, you're on too, by the way.
What? Hello.
Oh, hello, sir.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
All right. Hello. Well, let me start off with this. As far as, yeah, we're all pro-union.
Yeah.
As far as the grievances are concerned, grievances are based off of merit, and we have a lot of elected officials on the local level that are not educated, and they're either not writing grievances or they're saying there's no merit, or if they wrote a grievance somewhere up to the president, it ends up getting dismissed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I agree that we need to keep paying union dues, and we got to focus on the referendum, the one member, one vote, so we can reform the leadership. But the grievance process is not always fair. I've seen a lot of union brothers and sisters sitting on the outside that were wrongfully fired, and their grievances are not being taken seriously, and they're just making these people go through the process because they're trying to scare them and they're trying to silence them. As far as the company running the business as they see fit, I disagree with that because there's a contract that they that we all voted yes on or and approved, and therefore they can only run that business through the agreement. If they're violating the agreement, then they're violating all the rights of the membership. So the other thing is they're running these companies through the membership, meaning team leaders, our elected officials, you know, sitting there telling on the union brothers and sisters, directing the workforce, so on and so forth. So they're using our people as pawns for running these businesses and basically dividing the membership. But as far as what needs to happen, at least in my view of what needs to happen, as you guys know, John Deere's out there on strike right now. I think the union members that are not on strike need to utilize some of their off time, and they need to organize out in front of every region in the Solidarity House, because the only thing that stands between us and these companies and what we get in these tentative agreements is our leadership. And they're the ones holding us back. They're the ones intertwined with the very companies we work for, and they're suppressing us. And if we don't address them face to face, we're going to continue down this path. I have called the regions. I have called the Solidarity House. There is no more secretary answering the phone. They got a voicemail, and you leave a message, the region's not calling back, and the Solidarity House is not calling back. So the only way we're going to be able to address this is by organizing out in front of these regions and out in front of the Solidarity House, and we're going to have to confront them like I did the last 9 times that I was wrongfully suspended and fired. That's the only way you're going to get these things addressed. And that's just my view. We can't sit there and depend on the government oversight. I mean, just since August, the Solidarity House and the leadership has gone down to Florida twice already to a nice resort off the beach. It's no different than them going to Palm Springs. It's no different than them going to Vegas. So, I mean, where's right. government oversight when, you know, when they keep making trips down to Florida now?
Well, there's definitely not good financial stewardship. I'm sure they're not staying in Red Roof Inns.
No, they're actually at a resort.
Right.
So, I mean, we physically got to address these people because evidently they're not taking it serious. They're acting like a separate entity. They think they deserve more than the membership. They're forcing concessions on us while they've gotten a 31% salary increase. And they're basically, you know, telling us that, hey, we're recognized under the National Labor Relations Board as your legal representative and legal negotiator. We could do whatever we want. There's nothing you guys can do about it. Because even though they're violating the UAW Constitution, they drew that UAW Constitution up. And if they drew the rules of the Constitution, they control the outcome. I mean, how many times did we try to bring up Articles 30, 31, and Articles 8? And it didn't happen. So, I mean, we need to physically confront the leadership before they eat this union and continue to deteriorate it more and more from within. If the membership is not willing to physically confront the leadership, like the leadership confronts us at our local, at every tentative agreement threatening us, then we're going to end up losing. If we don't put nothing into this and we don't engage this fight, we're not going to get anything out of this fight.
All right.
I reached out to John Deere members. I let them use my page. I let them use the platform to reach out to their members, to educate their members on the tentative agreement, and it had some success. I think it played part in them voting no on their tentative agreement because their members were willing to come on and speak to the rest of their membership. I'm just a union brother on the outside looking in. But by getting them to make this Facebook Live, these members recognize their own members. So I think that played into the process of this tentative agreement getting voted down because they recognized the three. I'm sorry. They recognized the three gentlemen that were speaking about the tentative agreement. When you're talking about a pre-97, post-97, and then post-2021, where pre-97 gets a pension,
right.
post-97 get a partial pension. And then post-2021 gets no pension.
None
so,
at all.
I mean, if John Deere is made $1.66 million.
Bowie?
Hold on for a minute, Brian. Somebody's talking. Please mute your phone. And now let me get 240. Let me get 240 on real quick. Okay, go ahead, Brian.
If John Deere has made $1.66 billion just in the third quarter, that's not including the first or the second, and that's not including global profits, there is no reason why those 10,000 members at John Deere should not all receive a full pension and health care when they retire and better wages to keep up with inflation. I mean, look what's going on with John Deere right now. John Deere has gone down to one shift, and Chrysler is telling them, if you don't fill this form out by the 29th, you're fired. You don't get no benefits, no subpay, no unemployment, no nothing. You have to fill this form out and decide whether you're going to bounce to another state and uplift your family, or are you going to opt out and just hold on to your recall rights. So,
wow.
I mean, but here it is. Cindy Estrada and the Chrysler Department's all in Florida at a resort, a beach resort, and nobody's answering these questions that those members at John Deere need answered. So who's helping the membership? Who's fighting for the membership if they're all in Florida in their Speedos and their flip-flops?
What are they doing in Florida?
Supposedly, from what I read in the letter, it was just general union business. What that entails, I'm not sure.
Apparently, you can't do a business, union business in Detroit.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's why the membership need to get out in front of every region and out in front of that Solidarity House in Southfield, Michigan, and confront these people. Because if we don't, they're not going to take us serious. They're not answering calls. They're not returning calls. So we need to confront them.
I got my call answered, and whoever answered the phone was really rude, and I told her I didn't appreciate it.
How long ago was this?
About a month ago. I said,
yeah,
am I bothering you by calling you? You know, because I get the feeling that you don't want to take my call.
Well, they're not taking no calls from, because I called them last week. I called Region 4. Because I wanted to talk to Ron McEnroy on the John Deere situation, and nobody answered the phone. It was a voice recording. I left a recording for Ron to call me. He never called me. I got a hold of Brian Rothenberg, and I have his personal phone, and I texted him. He didn't reply back. And Brian Rothenberg is, if you guys don't know, he's the public relations guy for the Solidarity House. And I also called the Solidarity House with no reply.
Are they still supposedly working from home?
They weren't. When I drove up to the Solidarity House that is temporarily in Southfield, the parking lot was full. I'm not for sure about the region, but I know the facility in Southfield, the buildings were packed.
Okay. Interesting.
Now, Brian, I was told they were down in Florida this last time kind of trying to educate, I don't know what you want to call them, on how to solve the referendum vote. Also, in my humble opinion, in my dealings and listening to Uncle Dick, they were probably schooling them on how to steal this election, because they've had classes on it. I know that. We've all know that.
Okay, but then that's a clear violation of the rules as far as the UAW monitor, because they said they can't use UAW funds to interfere with it.
Right.
Yeah, but he's already changed that, has he not? According to Holderson, they got they sent in something to get that turned around so they can use the money.
Really?
Yeah. They're trying.
Okay, so if they're trying, my question is this. Did the courts, because my understanding that anything that goes between the UAW monitor and the leadership has to go in front of the judge. So did the judge approve that or didn't he?
Not yet.
Okay, so how are they still holding meetings trying to educate the leadership on how to make sure this referendum doesn't get passed? They're violating. They're in violation right now.
How did the president make the statement he made that he supports the system it is? They're not supposed to say one way or another. And excuse me, but from what I read in the paper, I don't think Brother Curry could have made it any clearer.
Yeah, but it's different with the newspaper because that's not using union funds.
It's not?
So he can go to the newspapers and say what he wants to say.
That's not him being considered being on the clock or, you know.
Well, I mean, if he was on the clock, yeah, that's different. Yeah, I guess it would be considered him using union funds. But I don't know when that, when they did that interview with them.
I can talk about it, but I don't know more because I'm afraid of it. What's going on with someone said Region 1D is in cahoots with National. Or not Region 1D, UAWD, I'm sorry.
They said UAWD is in cahoots with National?
International, yeah.
I mean, I've heard rumors about it with when it comes down to, because the UAWD group, Labor Notes, and Auto Worker Caravan are all tied together. And my understanding is from what I've been told by many people is basically they're paid opposition. But now I'm looking at it as the UAWD is more of an opportunist because they
right.
see all this going down and they're hoping that if the referendum gets passed, then those that are in the UAWD are most likely
right.
going to end up building a slate and running for the Solidarity House.
Yeah, they've got everybody's email. They've gotten donations, which they're building up a fund for, you know, a campaign.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, they are charging people a fee. The fee was much higher before, but I think they're charging them, I think, $25 a year.
$50 to
be on their page. And then I heard they were charging people $1,000 for things of printing out flyers and information and also
to
help them for campaigning. You said what?
Well, to pass out information about one man, one vote at your plant.
What's funny is when I came on my page today, because I have my main page and I have my group page, Justin Mayhew, which is part of the UAWD group, actually sent a friend request to my page after they kicked me out of the UAWD group over a year ago, and now it's like they want to come on my page. Even Labor Notes sent me a friend request as well to come on my page.
That's funny. You should be honored of that, Brian. That's funny.
Yeah. And then on top of that, if you look at the seminar, that's all the UAWD did on that seminar was promote the UAWD group.
Right.
So you know there's an agenda behind whatever they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
And like I said, they kicked me out because I told them that they're doing way too much. All we need to do is reform the membership, make the necessary constitutional amendment changes, and bylaw changes. They were rewriting the UAW Constitution. They were trying to recreate the union based off of Teamsters and also based off of New Directions. So I'm like, you guys are doing way too much. And, you know, the reality is this. That whole group, they can put a great news article together, just like WSWS and just like Labor Notes. Their newsletters are pretty damn good. But they don't got the backbone to fight for the membership. I have never seen any of them have the backbone to stand up against the leadership. When they're told to shut down, they shut down. You said what?
To me, that's what's scary about the whole thing. They're getting all these followers, all these supporters.
I would hope that the membership would be smart enough to make an educated vote. If this referendum gets passed, I don't know what the rules are going to be if this gets passed. We'll have to see what the monitor rolls out as far as the rules of the next convention. But there's got to be some way that they use the internet as a tool to where there can be some Q&A and, you know, each candidate that's running should have the opportunity to say what they have to say and maybe answer some questions along the way. And then the membership can make a decision from there. I mean, they could use the UAW.org page for that. So there's all kinds of options out there, but until this referendum gets passed and until the UAW monitor rolls out the rules of the convention, it's kind of hard to, you know, make like for me, if I decide whether I'm going to run again or not, I don't know. It's too early to make a call on that because I don't know what the rules are going to be. I don't even know if the referendum is going to get passed. And I don't know what's going to happen with the economy from this point to that and to the next convention. And I'm not trying to be the head of this union if it's too late and this union is about to collapse because maybe the economy is about to collapse. I mean, you got COVID. You got the debt ceiling. You got inflation. You got jobs going out of the country. You got these companies saying we have to be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets, and they're cutting our wages and benefits, killing off the middle class and our purchasing power. These companies are getting local, state, and federal tax abatements. So, I mean, who's paying for the local, state, and federal infrastructure, and who's supporting the local, state, and federal economy? I mean, something's got to give eventually. So, you know, I'm just kind of holding off before I make a decision on what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And if the UAWD group decides that they're going to build a slate and run against Ray Curry and maybe some other groups step up, maybe some retirees, because there's no language stating that retirees can't run.
Well, one thing,
I know that their tradition is the age of 65 that they retired, but there's no actual language on that.
Right.
I think there'll be some retirees that run.
I would like
one
to see
thing,
that.
People out there
we did
need
before.
To understand, under this current system we have, they waste a whole day at the convention where Solidarity House parades out their candidates, and virtually nobody ever runs against them because it's almost pointless. You have no chance to win. That's one reason we have to get rid of it. We're, our union is paying for a day of convention where really nothing gets done.
No,
other than just parading people out there that are running unopposed.
Well, actually, right. 4 days and nothing getting done.
But that
well,
should prove to the membership that's why they need to support the referendum, one member, one vote, because
exactly.
We know that the convention is a controlled atmosphere.
Right.
The
we
international
know.
Takes these, the international takes these delegates behind closed doors. They ask
right.
them, who are you supporting? They
right.
promise them things. They wine and dine them, or
right.
they threaten and target them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why I'm mentioning this right now, because if you have not been to a convention and they talk about so-and-so was elected president or regional director, the average rank-and-file member does not understand an actual election never took place. These
right.
people were all elected by acclamation.
They don't even understand the convention or any of it.
It's a farce.
Well,
they don't
I
know
mean, think about it. I've said it many times. I mean, here it is. Ron Gettelfinger selected right. Bob King, and then Bob King selected Dennis Williams. Dennis Williams selected Gary Jones. Gary Jones selected Ray Curry and Rory Gamble, and then Rory Gamble selected Ray Curry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
thank caucus.
I didn't want to interrupt all you guys. You know, I'm not going to be for or against anybody on this for the referendum vote. I know that the UAWD was asking for 25 years or $25 for a year membership, and I know that they raised like $22,000 for the deer workers. Any over that, they're going to donate to the Kellogg Strikers. I mean, I'm not going to go out there and just be pro or anti for anybody, but they were organized. I'm going to tell you, Brian knows this. They've been organized like you were trying to get organized. This has been going on for 5 years now, Brian.
Yeah,
you
we
know
need.
I agree. But the difference is I'm not asking people for money because you don't know what
I understand,
that money's going.
But you're not coming to my local and coming to my local printer and laying down $500 for leaflets so I can put it inside the plan either. They're doing that.
Yeah,
right.
Some people are spending money out of their own pocket.
Well,
they're donating.
you ever think that there's an agenda behind all that?
That's
well, we do. But what's everybody else going to perceive as?
So they're paying for that agenda. They're getting money from other people to print up things to help other locals, but there's an agenda behind that.
That's just like how the International pays for auto caravans, little picnic they have down there. And, God, I can't remember if it was North or South Carolina, but every spring they would get a bus paid for by the International. They would fund their whole trip down there and back. Now, these are people who are supposed to be against each other. So worse, think about that, people.
Look, and I'm not saying that, you know, that I don't support the UAWD, but really at the end of the day, it's up to the membership on who they want to decide that's going to lead this union.
Right.
So,
the most important thing is one member, one vote right now. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
The rest of this shit we can deal with afterwards. We got to get this referendum. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
However we get to it, I'm at that point. However we get to that, as long as we can get the one member, one vote, then we'll deal with other shit later.
I think
you got to call it what it is, folks. It's not one member, one vote. People are going to be looking for that, and then you're going to be confused.
You're right.
It's direct,
voting
system, people.
Direct voting system.
I think most of us can agree we don't want the to have a monopoly.
One at a time, guys. One at a time. Go ahead, Paul.
I said most of us, I think, can agree we don't want the current bums to have a monopoly. And that's what they have. We don't have any choice. Even as a delegate, if you go to the convention, you don't have anybody to choose from. Because nobody bothers to run.
Well, Gary Walkowitz and myself ran the last convention, and the delegates continued to choose Gary Jones, and now Gary Jones is behind bars.
Well, I mean, you don't have a realistic chance to win. I was one of the handful that voted for Gary Walkowitz in 2014.
No, you don't have a realistic chance at all.
All I'm
and
saying
two
is,
retirees did run at that convention in 2018.
Right.
And all I'm saying is, I don't want a group of people coming in with a socialist communist agenda. I mean, the Constitution already speaks about that. And the last thing we want is something worse than what we already have now.
Absolutely.
So we got to be careful with this.
Yep.
Well, the most important thing is everybody come together and get this direct voting system. That's the most important thing, because if we don't get that, we don't get anything anyway. Everything is mute.
Right.
That's correct.
We don't have any way of getting rid of crap contracts as long as we have the current system.
That's right,
yes.
Paul.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
No, so I don't belong to any, you know, I like, you know, Brian, how I feel about you. I don't like you, never have. And that goes
neither have
I. And I don't like
so
either one.
So we share that in common.
But
we share that in common.
I have utmost respect for you. You know that. And but this show's got to be kind of neutral. But whoever, we just got to get these folks out. We got to get this direct voting system, and then let's worry about the rest of the stuff afterwards. Just get this first and then let the war start, or whatever it's going to be, because it's going to be a war. It's just that's right. And then when the dust settles, then we move on and come together, because if we don't come
we move on in a positive way.
Absolutely.
Nothing has been passed out to the membership to explain, because this is how it needs to, I mean, we have 6,000 people at our plant, and I'm going to guess probably at least 60%, sadly, don't even know what this is.
Well, that's a shame. That is a shame.
And that's true.
And
I think the UAW monitor has got to do more to educate the membership on this direct voting, and they're not doing that.
Wow.
Not at all.
60%? That's scary.
Bad. It's not far-fetched. I get on social. I was getting on social media and talking about this before they said that you can't use union funds, because then I got nervous.
Yeah.
People were asking questions. People wanted to know what I was talking about.
That's what Scott Holderson was talking about, is that they have the International's approach to UAW monitor, saying they wanted the permission to be able to use the shop committee and union people to go out on the floor and talk to people up to 15 minutes per person while on the job on the referendum. You know what, and we all talked about that. That's not a good idea.
No, it needs to be done at the union halls.
Well, I think something should be passed out.
Yeah. Yeah, 60% at the truck plant. Know what the hell it is about?
Well, I'm hoping that the higher education, and I'm hoping that the retirees are getting more information, and hopefully they'll be able to flip this in the support of the direct voting system, because if the active membership is not getting this information like they should. I know the higher education is, and I know a lot of the retirees are as well. So hopefully that'll flip that support in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Right. You know,
be quiet.
Where we're at at our local, they put out a 2-page spread on that, if you remember right, from the education committee, why one member, one vote was bad. Do you remember that?
Paper, the local paper.
Yeah.
Written by Randy, a.k.a. Ryan Baholski.
Oh. Okay.
Put out from the education department, and I'm sure our president has something to do with that writing, but.
Oh, you can bet on that.
They don't
Did
want
they
to.
Did they say we're too stupid to know what's best for us? We need to leave that up to our leaders to decide that.
That's the truth.
Was that the rationale, or did they actually come up with something?
Yeah.
I honestly didn't even know.
No, Paul, you're right. They were too stupid. But here they do. They vote for officers at the truck plant to be on the committee. To go to delegation to go down there and vote for you, like Johnny Johnson, so what, vice president. He was elected to the last convention. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Well, guess what he's going to vote for, folks, and everybody with him is going to vote with him. Come on.
You talking about Jackson?
Yeah, Jackson. That's Johnny.
Okay.
I worked with Johnny a long time.
Okay.
And good guy, nice guy. But you don't put him on that. You just don't send him to Detroit to the convention. He's elected official. Guess you just got to know what he's going to vote for.
Well,
everything
they were all elected.
You're against.
Every delegate that we sent.
Yeah. And it's been like that. I've been at the truck plant for 35 years. And
yeah, because nobody runs for delegate because nobody even knows what the hell it is.
This is the... I ran for delegate before, you know, I know what it was, and I remember seeing, and I got witnesses this when we were running for delegate. We brought in new hires, and they handed them their election papers and walked them right on down, and they went in and voted.
I'm a witness. They walked them right down by my job, right downstairs, and I asked, I said, what are you guys doing? New hires. We're going downstairs to vote. Really?
Right.
And there, I don't know, 30, 40 of them just marched on downstairs, but that wasn't the only group. They split the groups up, you know, so everybody voted for what they wanted. And
this last time a lot of locals were told from international to send your elected officials, preferably chairman, president, vice president, shop committees at large, and have the alternates also be elected people. Because if you remember right, there's been somebody who's went to every last CASUS convention, I guess, for the last, 15 years or so, and she wasn't allowed in the club this last time, was she?
Who are you talking about?
VP. Oh. I'll give you initials. You know what I'm talking about now? No.
Don't get yourself in trouble, Scotty.
It's her.
Yeah, right.
Well, one of the reasons that these people are so hard to beat is their opposition gives up too easily. I mean, they threw up all kinds of roadblocks to me, but I was persistent. I beat the Nora Jewel machine in 2006, and then the next time I ran as a retiree, they said I couldn't get in the plant anymore, even though it had always been the policy to let retirees in. So I lost that election. Next time I came back, camped at the gates, wrote 3 handbills, and I won. You know, it takes sustained, concentrated, determined effort. You can't just give up when you lose. You have to keep going and going and going. That's how you wear these people down. That's how you beat a political machine with the persistently handbilling with the truth.
Can't be bullied.
They can't defend their record. How can they really go out there and tell people that it's good for you, that you work for half the pay of somebody else and you don't get a pension and health care, and it's good for you to have work conditions that are crap and have your brakes cut and to be working with carpal tunnel and tendonitis, a back brace, a brace on your elbow, a brace on your hand? You know, their policies are nothing but crap, and they can't stand up to sustained scrutiny. These people can be beaten. I'm probably one of the world's lousiest politicians because I don't know how to network. I won't beg people for money for my literature. I just go out and do it myself. And the thing is, you can beat them if you're determined. Because people will respond to the truth. It takes a long time to win them over, but you can get them thinking over a period of time. And that's what it's going to take if we want to turn the UAW around. It's going to take commitment.
True.
Wow.
I mean, you can ask Mattis. I'm a lousy politician. I just don't give up. I don't have any conventional political strengths.
Yeah. Hmm.
Well,
I think it's going to...
Go ahead.
Hello? Go ahead.
Well, that's where I use the union page as a platform to reach as many members as I can possibly reach to at least try to educate them. So even hypothetically saying I run or I don't run, it's not the purpose. The purpose of these pages or even this show is to educate the membership on the contract, the Constitution, the bylaws, and what's going on within the union. And
amen.
I think if we continue to educate these members, I mean, they're living this every single day, they're eventually going to wake up to it. So I think, you know, like she was talking about 60% of the active members not getting the information on the direct vote, I think as long as we keep speaking about it, that information, even these, whether it be this live show or my Facebook Live videos, they're going to share this information. And it's going to get to other people, and hopefully, you know, it wakes a lot of people up. I mean, it's a tool, and we got to utilize these tools.
And you're being persistent. You know, if they only hear from the leadership, That's the only people they're going to vote for.
Yeah, just like, you know, we have a right to our considered protected activity. And that's exactly what John Deere did at the beginning. Those members came out before the strike authorization, and they were out there sounding off to let the company and the leadership know where they stand and what they expected from this tentative agreement. And I think all members need to utilize whatever rights they have, being that your concerted protected activity is one of the main ones, that you need to get out in front of these regions in Solidarity House and let your voice be heard. Let the leadership know that you're not happy with these tentative agreements or these contracts. You're not happy about grievances not being answered or people's rights being heard. That, you know, the only way that the leadership is going to address these issues is if you guys confront them. I mean, I said this years ago. I told the membership we should have gone through the Solidarity House gates when we had that chance. And they've weakened us so much since the last time I said that, that if we don't do something now, it's only going to get worse if this one member, this direct voting does not get passed.
Well, you're like Muhammad Ali. He said his opponents could run, but they couldn't hide.
Yeah.
Just keep going at them. That's what you have to do.
I agree, absolutely. And that's what you guys have been doing on this show. And that's what some of us others have been doing. You know, whether it be the UAWD group, they're going at it at a different angle than maybe this show or even myself. But the thing is, everybody's being consistent. Everybody's taking part in educating the membership. Whether we agree with them or not on certain things, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is educating the membership, making them aware of the referendum, the direct voting, and we'll see what happens from there.
Hear, hear.
We don't have much time left.
Balance vote this week. And we know how the influence of certain locals are on certain individuals in certain locations, too.
Yep.
Just saying.
I mean, one of the things that people complain about me when I do my Facebook Lives, they complain about my presentation. Now, I know that the message is more important than the presentation, but because my presentation might not relate to every member, and maybe your presentation on the show does, or maybe even the UAWD's presentation, it doesn't matter. As long as everybody comes out saying what they got to say to educate this membership, you guys are going to be able to reach people that I can't. And so same thing with the UAWD group. They're going to be able to reach people that I can't because everybody's presentation might be different. Even though our message is the same, the presentation is different.
That's correct. And we need that.
We just got to keep moving forward and being consistent.
Absolutely.
Consistent and factual. Everybody get quiet.
And if somebody wants to go against a and doesn't agree with the direct voting system, ask them why. Just ask them why. When we have to get the answers to each other, just ask them why.
I'll tell you what a lot of them say is that you're not going to know half these people who are running. Anybody can run. And it's going to cause a problem because one person's going to run, you know, just say, for instance, I mean, somebody from this UAWD, they've got their names out there. They've been out there for a while. You know, I don't know who they are because I don't get on their page. But a lot of people have.
Well, you got to be realistic.
That's the other thing, too, because if you got the UAWD group, say you got me and maybe a few others, and we're all campaigning at the same time, We got to be careful with that because Ray Curry and his caucus could still end up getting back in there depending on how the votes are divided.
Right.
I mean, that's what happens to Teamsters.
There's downsides to this.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, the current leadership's already well organized, so even if we get the right to elect them, they've still got a head start.
Yeah.
They got plenty of money. They got a strong organization. But the truth is they have a lousy track record, and that's what we have to point to.
Well, I don't feel like we have enough control over anything because I think that, like, for instance, I think that whoever a candidate is should have all the candidates should have the same amount of money to campaign with. It should be provided by UAW. Nobody should be able to have a fair advantage by having more money to campaign. But
well, I mean, I agree. I agree with Paul. I mean, they got a lousy track record. I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind to support them again. So I think it's something that the federal oversight, whatever the rules that they roll out, that they got to make it fair for each candidate to run on the same type of platform and to get the same resources, and we'll go from there. Hopefully that ends up happening.
But how do you make that happen?
How do you do that?
Yeah, how do you make that happen?
I mean, it's going to take the membership to call up the UAW monitor and say, hey, you know, when you roll out the rules for this, you got to make sure there's an equal playing field out there for all members to have the same access to the same platform that the Solidarity House has and have the same resources.
We need to start doing that stuff now.
Understanding that the UAW International Executive Board has already went and is trying to go to court. It has not happened yet. They're trying to go to court with this, that they can spend money on the general funds to fight this thing.
Right.
You know, every UAW local that's in this country right now should say, no. But they don't. They don't.
Well, that's because they want the current system.
Right.
The leaders do. They like, it's a nice gravy train at the convention. You know, I've gone there 4 times. I don't drink, so I didn't take advantage of the alcohol, but the food was great and nice atmosphere. The thing is, but it's a crappy system. And we need to let, like I said, one thing I think is really important is to do your best to let people know that there is not really an election at the convention.
Right.
No.
I mean, it's a farce when all the regional directors run unopposed. You know, what is there? How many is there? Like 14, 15 positions, whatever it is, on the executive board. And at best, you got like a couple people running against them. I mean, people don't know this, but they read in the union newspaper that Dennis Williams was elected to the convention. He wasn't elected to the convention. He just was rubber stamped at the convention. That's all.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, we could say that about the UAW monitor. How do we know that's not a farce? And it's really not about perception. Because when we look at the fact of the class action lawsuit and the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board based off the corruption and bargaining our contracts in bad faith, and both of those things got shut down, and everyone that has been indicted basically got a slap on the wrist, maybe the UAW monitor, the federal oversight, is making it look like, you know, we have somewhat of a say to change this process.
Right.
But the reality is, if the Solidarity House is negotiating with the UAW monitor, then do we really have a say in the process? Because the membership is not able to get with the UAW monitor and negotiate certain items like the leadership is.
And I think that's part of a huge part of a problem.
Yeah, that's. I mean, to me, it's again, it's about perception. Is this a farce? Are they just playing the membership, making it look like we're part of this process, but the reality is we're not? And the outcome is going to be that somehow this one member or this direct voting referendum is not going to get passed.
Is there any way that Brian, you and maybe this show could invite the monitor on to ask questions? You think that could happen?
I would love to try.
I mean, yeah. We would have to call that number on the card and see if they were willing to come on.
I've got the number.
And that'd be the only way to do it. Call them up.
And you do your thing, and maybe we can get her on, or him, whoever, on this show, and your podcast, and have at it. You know, ask questions. Find out what the hell's going on.
Right.
Yeah. That sounds like the best thing to do.
Yeah.
I bet they won't do it. You were trying, though.
Well, if they don't do it, that will show you that what I said was true, that it's all about perception.
I certainly don't trust them either. I certainly, anything the FBI is involved with and appointing people and things, I don't trust, because the buyouts, UAW gives a ton of money to a lot of people that we don't even know about.
Look at these easy sentences
these guys got for ripping us off. Come on.
Right.
And they get to keep their pension. They get to, they get a piddly fine, and they ripped us off all these years. Come on. This goes back way back before the people that got busted. This goes way back.
I agree. But that, if you guys can make that happen,
yeah,
that would make for an interesting show.
Yeah, well, wouldn't it?
Well,
huge audience.
You never ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah, that's right. And the number to the UAW monitor is 212-303-2529. 212-303-2529. And you can call, and be Brian's show, this show, or both shows. It'd be fine with it, just do it. The only way to try is to pick up the phone and do it, right? Get a chance.
Correct.
It's always worth a try. Wayne Gretzky said you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So
good point.
I mean, personally, I think Don, you or Scott, it would be best that you guys. I mean, you guys are the host of the show, so I mean, you guys direct the show. So I think it would be best that you guys send him an invite to the show.
Yeah,
to see what happens.
We can do that, Scotty.
Yep.
That'd be you. That'd be you wake up.
I'll try that tomorrow.
Okay. Good man.
And just inform the rest of us prior to the show that they're going to be coming on.
Absolutely.
So we can make sure we can reach everybody that we can.
You damn right. Oh, yeah. It's not going to be, I can come on tonight at 7 and it's already 6:45. And nobody. No.
I'd love to know why the government even agreed to this process and just didn't order, direct election.
Yeah, I agree. That's got me baffled, because why? I mean, they did it with Teamsters, why is it any different with the Solidarity House or the UAW, to where they're actually letting the leadership at the Solidarity House negotiate the terms of how this gets played out? Is got me baffled.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, Rory Gamble was the one that initiated it and had conversation with the federal government. And right now, the way I'm looking at things, this doesn't look like it's going in the direction of helping the membership.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, one thing the government rewards is cooperation when it comes to prosecutions. You know, these people all got light sentences because they pled guilty.
Yeah.
And it was a feather in the cap of the people that prosecuted them.
Yeah, but on top of that,
right.
it's the UAW membership that's paying for this oversight, and they even fined Chrysler $30 million. And so the government's getting $30 million off the backs of the membership who took that were forced with concessionary contracts.
Right.
And we paid all the legal bills of Norwood Jewell, Dennis Williams, Gary Jones, and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
So I don't see how that's exactly fair to the membership when we're the ones that were affected by all this corruption, collusion, nepotism, and them bargaining our contracts in bad faith.
Yeah.
But they tell us we don't have a case, but the federal government has a case, and the Solidarity House has a right to negotiate with the federal government on the terms of this referendum.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty strange.
Yeah, I agree, Paul.
Wow. Well,
but what do I know? I'm just an hourly employee.
Yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about next week. And I will try to hold the monitor tomorrow and see what we can come up with.
Sounds like a plan.
I mean, like I said, all he's got to say is no. That's fine.
Yeah, and tell him or her that if they say no, we're going to stick our bulldog on her or him, and that's Adrian. And you don't want to mess with it's easier to deal with us little peons than to deal with Adrian.
Oh, don't go there.
Oh, I tell you.
So you want me to leave your name out of it, right?
Because Adrian's going to be the one that asks all the hard-nosed questions.
Yeah, I know it.
We'll see if
I'm already Adrian. When he asks me how do I spell your name, I'll just say it's D O N.
I often think about the meeting that I had at Solidarity House with one of their lawyers. when we were trying to get ready for that convention and we wanted to do a mailing. And the person that first went, they were told that they couldn't do it.
Do it.
So asked to go down and talk to them. And so they brought the lawyer out. And she said, oh, no, you can see the list, but you can't copy it. Oh, no problem. I don't need to copy it. All I need to do is be able to count and count from how many delegates at the regents and what have you. Oh, no, you can't do that. This was, I forget the gentleman's name. And the lawyer said, oh, you can't stop that. Yeah, they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what got her was the fact that I could count so fast.
Oh, okay.
I was counting the numbers. Sharon and I were together, and I told Sharon, I don't want you to say nothing. I just want you to write these numbers down. And I started shooting numbers at Sharon, and she was just writing the numbers down.
Damn.
And at the end, the lawyer said, you are precise. And I looked at her and smiled.
That's
said,
right.
Thank you. I got my information. I know what we need to do. Thank you so very much.
for accommodating us. That was the person that followed me every day that I was at that convention. And it's like, why is this woman following me? I already knew why she was following me, but
oh.
It was just funny. So, you know, I say that because I know their tricks, some of their tricks. It's a lot of trickery involved.
Yeah.
And that's real sad.
And a lot of intimidation.
But it's like, just like you got those tricks, don't forget we got a bag too.
That's right.
See, once we all put our heads together, it works out.
It'll work
in our favor.
That's right.
I'm going to pray on that. I've been praying on that every day, that it's working in our favor.
Wow. Keep on doing it, because I started praying and they wanted to know who I was. So it's been that long since I said a prayer. But maybe I can get him on board. No, that, who knows? Prayer works.
We got to do something. And I hope these retirees and any of them that's listening, all of that, the UAW has been good to me. They have not.
No.
They have used you. Now, it's not the UAW. It's certain officials that's there, representatives. You might want to call them leaders. They're not leaders. Leaders will never take you somewhere blindly. They will never try to take from you. They try to enhance everything about you.
I agree.
So think about it.
Regarding prayer, in the Old Testament it says the Lord's eyes are upon the righteous and his ears are open to their prayers.
That's correct.
So,
so who's righteous in this group?
Well, they're going to kick us off here in a second since I walked.
Yes.
Well, good night, Rabbit right. Roses.
Yes.
Good night,
good night
Paul.
Good
evening, Paul.
Good night, Brian. Good night, Stephanie.
Good night.
Melissa.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Jim. Good night.
Good night, Steph. Welcome to
yes.
the show. Hope you come back. Nice talking
Thank
to you.
You.
You're
you
welcome
too.
Here. All right, guys. We'll be back next Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the UAW Factory Whistle Show. And don't forget, don't throw your ballot out. Check it out. Could be a flimsy little card. It could be any all kinds of things. So keep an eye out for it this week. And we'll see you. And stay safe. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.